Yes. My friends, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us tonight. It's Eric the Freedom Streamer on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We appreciate you being with us. I think tonight we're going to do the Bill Gritz thing. I'd like to play a four-part series with presentation by Colonel Bill Gritz. I like what he had to say, and I think our listeners would like it as well. It was something he did back in the early 90s. I think, and there's a few people out there who may have heard it before, but we have a lot of new listeners and younger people in this who have... And people overseas as well, and people who haven't heard this before, I think it would be nice to hear the four-part series from Bill Gritz called Straight Talk. And very interesting how things have not changed since, every 20 or 30 years. It just, we look back and it's everything's the same as it was before, and if not, way, way, way worse. I wish I had better news to report, but as we go into this Patriot persecution of 2017, do I need to say it again? Look at all the Patriots that are locked up right now. And the Justice Department could care less. They've given the thumbs up and the green light to hunt as many patriots, real patriots, as possible, not the pseudo-patriots like Arpaio, real patriots like the Bundys and the Hammonds and Tom Lacovara. And I'm waiting to hear what happened at his sentencing. Supposedly it was going to be the 18th, but I think Lori said they delayed it again. We can't get anything straight with this. They keep changing the address on the mail, so people are having letters returned. Dates for whatever appearances he has in the witch's court are constantly being changed at the last minute, and so we're just trying to track what's going on as best we can. If anybody's got information, please post it at freedomscreamradio.chattango.com. That's where everybody can see it there. Just get it posted, post your comments, or post what information you have, or call in 800-313-9443. Once again, follow this broadcast in our chat room at freedomscreamradio.chattango.com. chattango.com. And all right, so with that, I think we're going to get right into the series. Tomorrow we're going to have Lori Anderson back on. I want to stay focused on what she has to say about these shootings in Las Vegas. I usually don't get wrapped up in these type of things, these mass shootings or these events, whatever the event du jour being put forth, and these events are obviously staged. Sure, there's real killing, there's real mayhem, and there's always a useful idiot patsy, Lee Harvey Oswald and Osama bin Laden, Stephen Paddock, Lee Harvey, Ben Paddock. Okay, so with that, we're gonna go to the documentary. It should probably chew up the whole 2 hours. You can hear from Eric the Freedom Screamer again tomorrow night. We'll have Laurie Anderson back on, and Gary and Chris as well. So I urge people to support the Republic Broadcasting Network. Don't forget to do that. This is up to you now. This is true public broadcasting. I want to thank Mike on the board, John Statmiller, and John Herzog. And with that, we're going to get into Colonel Bo Greitz giving a presentation, kind of a back-to-basics thing about, well, and he's not afraid to name names either, and I like that. So this guy's for real, and he's a patriot. I think that we should, you know, keep it that we shouldn't forget about our old school patriot guys who have done their duty as far as being patriotic and doing things to restore the constitutional republic, or at least preserve it as best they could. So with that, Mike, I'm going to ask you to spin it. I'm probably not going to stay on the line. I think Mike can handle it. We'll just play it right through the commercials. Mike knows what he's doing. Thanks, Mike, on the board. You're a master at this, and I appreciate you bringing forth this documentary so our listeners can hear. Colonel Bo Greitz, great talk. Go ahead, Mike. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Yes, good to be with you here. What should we talk about today? I made a little list. How about AIDS, abortion, Iraq, flag burning, drugs, crime, budget, PLO, Israel, terrorism, savings and loan, health care, Social Security, education, Soviets. How about the H-bomb, POWs, ET, environment, prayer, corruption, homeless, unemployment, animal rights, gun control? Any others? Well, let's see. USA Today says that we have 19 cities that have set all-time records for heinous crimes, meaning murder, armed robbery, and this type of thing. Here's an article that says one in every four people in the continent of Africa has AIDS. Here's another one. It's full page. I kind of thought it was representative of 1991 America. It says states face record tax hikes. Food stamp recipients hit an all-time high, and we're on the brink of war, and Bush pledges swift action. Now, let's see what else we got here. Just a little statistics. People like statistics, I think. We're all the time receiving some kind of poll that says America has never been better off, and 89% of the people support President George Bush. Violent crime is up 544%. Teenage pregnancies between 10 and 14 years up 553%. Sexual disease transmission up 226%. Unmarrieds living together 353%. Divorce is up 117%. Boy, we are in good shape, aren't we? Well, there is hope, because in USA Today, here is a half-page ad that says Jesus is coming in the autumn of 1992. All right, hallelujah. Well, now here's a newspaper article that says Singapore has a new card up its sleeve, an electronic ID tracks its citizens. And they have a new debit card in Singapore. Here's the article on it. The new debit card requires everybody 18 years or older to register. They get a barcode ID card in which they can use credit debit. It also has an electronic matrix. That's what they call it. The matrix will include every government agency, from traffic tickets to school loans to paying your telephone bill to taxes to whether you're wanted for murder. Whenever you use this card, these agencies are checked electronically. If there is any kind of outstanding warrant against you, the light turns red and you don't get your 10 gallons worth of gas, or you don't get your groceries. And they also have, it says here, a telephonic arrest warrant now, where when the agency sees on the computer that you are at the 7-Eleven and you haven't paid your traffic ticket or your parking ticket, they simply dial the 7-Eleven and say, hold this person under arrest until the authorities arrive. Well, I got one a little bigger. I blew this one up. This is right out of Time magazine. You see, everybody believes Time magazine, Mikhail Gorbachev is Time Magazine's Man of the Decade. And they give you some kind of an electronic Dick Tracy watch if you take Time, so I know that all of you are subscribers. So this is in Time Magazine, and it says, Peddling Big Brother. It says underneath that, foreign governments are snapping up surveillance systems that are produced in the West. And here's a comely Thai lass showing her barcoded ID card, which just like Singapore, only in Thailand, 16 years of older, you're required to register, and this also will serve as a credit or debit card. Well, let's turn now to proposed reforms of the United Nations. This is a government printing document. Let me read you what it says under the title of Committee to Frame a World Constitution. This is the preamble to the World Constitution. I'm just going to read the last couple of lines here. It says, quote, the age of nations must end. The governments of the nations have decided to order their separate sovereignties into one government, to which they surrender their arms. What do you think George Washington, James Madison, John Hancock, Thomas Jefferson, and those others would have thought about this kind of a preamble to the new Constitution? Those are treasonous, and they are fighting words in those days. They ought to be fighting words today. Aha, but here's a nice ad that if you haven't seen it, you will. This ad was in Phoenix. It's going around the United States, and it says, imagine being a citizen under the new world order. And do you know who the keynote speaker is? It says here that Dorothy Nelson, judge for the 9th District Court of Appeals, is the keynote speaker. This symposium is presented as a public service, means they don't have to pay for this ad, by the United Nations Association, the Baha'i Faith, co-sponsored by the Global Interactions and World Federation Association. And it says here, imagine a global society filled with solutions. Oh, what are some of the solutions? Well, this one just came like 2 days ago. It is sent to all who own an automobile in Arizona. This is from the State Farm Insurance Company. How many of you have State Farm here? See, some of you do. And so if you're in Arizona, you've already got this. Because here's what it says. It says the Arizona House Bill 2098 requires insurers to provide policy owners with a special identification card which can be scanned by optical character recognition equipment. This endorsed scannable card must be presented in order for you to register your vehicle once a year. Well, what does that mean? Let's go back in time a little bit. Here's another one. This time it is New York Times, and it is March of 1990, and the U.S. Senate is considering the adoption of an identity card for every American citizen. Now, what does all this equate to? Well, the purpose of this talk is to present you with a number of vignettes, any one of which you can choose to verify and get involved with because all of them concern you. I'm an intelligence officer. All I've done since I've been an adult is work behind the veil of national security. But unlike some intelligence officers, I remembered the oath of allegiance that I took. And the oath when I raised my hand to the square was to bear true faith and allegiance to the United States of America, to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That does not mean covering up for my boss's wrongdoings. That doesn't mean shredding documents. It doesn't mean lying before the United States Congress. And so I have decided to lift the veil of national security and reveal what is not being kept secret from the Soviets anymore, because Mikhail Gorbachev is our man of the decade. And the Soviet system has gone belly up, obviously. And Mikhail now is looking for a $100 billion loan. So who are the secrets being kept from? From you, from us, the United States. Exactly. And so this whole thing about cards, well, okay, you're from California, most of you. California, pick this one out of the California paper, offers the nation a model ID card. Now, where are we going with this thing? Well, this gives us a little bit of an idea. Here it says school children are using debit cards now. This is an experiment in Milford, Connecticut. And a little guy named Guy Duarte, I hope Guy Duarte lives long enough and we still have a constitutional system long enough that we can vote for this guy, because he gets my vote for president. They asked Guy Duarte what he thought, because you take your card and you run it through the scanner, and if it turns green, you get lunch. If it turns red, you don't. And Guy Duarte says, quote, "I think it's dumb. What happens if your ticket shows up red? You don't get lunch." Guy Duarte is pretty prophetic, isn't he? Now, on Guy Duarte's level, we're talking your ticket showing up red, just like I have illustrated already in the media in just the last month or two. In Singapore and in Thailand and in other nations, this is going on right now. And the whole idea is to lead to what Consumer Report calls the New World Debt Cards. Because very rapidly, we are moving toward a system where there is no jingles in your pocket. There are nothing that folds. It's all plastic, and it is all controllable. And I think this is part of what it means to be a citizen in the New World Order. So I'm going to talk about my experiences personally behind the veil of national security, because we, as soldiers, as special forces soldiers who are part of the secret forces of America, are the mechanics. We are the hammers. We're the screwdrivers. We do the wet work for the New World Order. And we do it with enthusiasm, because if I had not joined special forces as a young man, I'd probably been imprisoned. I had a lot of initiative. But what can a kid who's 18 years old, who has a lot of initiative, can he do in the world today? Well, in special forces, they teach you how to crack safes, how to pick locks, how to fly airplanes, how to fall out of the sky like bird manure, how to swim underneath the ocean. They teach you how to break six bricks with a single blow and blow up things. And for this, I've been highly decorated many times rather than being put in prison. So it was a very exciting life. I'm just telling you the truth, and I am going to tell you the truth until they run me off of this platform. The point is that you have many young enthusiasts, like a young Bo Greitz, who comes from the great state of Oklahoma, who was raised on Bible Belt Christianity, had a dog that was my best friend along with my grandma, and who literally grew up from the time I was 5 years old carrying my own rifle. You grow up hard-headed. I got shot in the back of the head in Vietnam. Literally, the bullet bounced off. We don't wear steel helmets. In special forces, we wear green berets. I'm certifiably hard-headed. But there's something that happens to young men like me, because you also have this feeling. I think it came from my grandma. You know, different than today, when I came home, my grandma was always there. Now, my folks were all fighting the war. My dad died in World War II as a B-17 bomber pilot. My ma flew as a ferry pilot, and so everybody was gone except grandma. And my granddad was a truck driver. But when I came home from school, if I popped the door open and said, "Mom," and she didn't answer, there was big trouble afoot. And so she was able to teach me how to read when I was about 5 years old. I didn't learn how to read in the first grade. 750,000 graduated this year who could not read their diploma. That's high school graduates. And George Bush is talking about reinventing education. Something very insidious has been going on behind your back. Both of us are kind of like Rip Van Winkle. We've been asleep for a long time. I've been on the other side of the veil. You've been out here. You're waking up now. And what you're asking is, what has been going on in the last 30 or 40 years while I have been doing other things? And what I'm doing is, having done my wet work as a mechanic of the New World Order, I'm spreading the veil saying, what in the hell is going on out here for the last 30 to 35 years that I've been back there plying my trade craft? And so I think together we're educating each other, and I think together we're going to wake up and we're going to do something that will reverse the New World Order. Otherwise, friends, it is like looking down Westmoreland's tunnel and seeing the light and finding out it's not New Jersey, but instead it's a freight train, and it's headed this way, and it's going to sweep you and all others who won't be prepared away. There's only three kinds of folks in this world. There's those who wait for things to happen, and that's probably 90%. There are those who make things happen, and there are those who wonder what happened. You should, in all sincerity, count yourself among the very small minority, and because you're here, I believe that this is a leadership symposium. We're not here to entertain you. You get that on the 6 o'clock news. You get that Thursday night with the Simpsons. And have you ever kind of figured out how it is that Severi and all of these other main people in the media make about the same as Joe Montana and about the same as Sylvester Stallone? They're all in the same business. It's called entertainment. But we're not here to entertain you today. I know each one of the speakers who are going to address you, each one of us has a message. Not all of you will be motivated toward all of the things that we have to speak about. And that's why I say I'm going to give mine in a series of vignettes. You decide what's best for you. And let me give you just a little hint how to go about it. As a trained intelligence officer, my wife often says, Bo, you're so gullible. You just believe anything that anybody says. As a trained intelligence officer, my arms are out. I want to get my arms around all of the information that is available. But now doesn't mean that I am naive. Once I've got my arms around all the information that's available, then I begin a very careful process of verifying every shred of that information. And those things that I can verify as true, I hold to. Because in the end, no matter what the media does or anything else, truth and reality will bear out, and the rest of it I discard. So I invite you, I'm going to give you a lot of information. I invite you to get your arms around it, and then you check any of it you want to, because the information I'm giving you is information I have already verified. In 1964, I went to Vietnam in command of a mercenary group. As a matter of fact, in 1976, there was a guy by the name of Francis Ford Coppola. He was going to do a movie. It was called Apocalypse Now, otherwise known as Apocalypse. There's all kinds of names for it. It was the first Vietnam movie. And, gosh, I got a letter through the Pentagon from Coppola, and he said, Bo, I want to use the photograph out of General William C. Westmoreland's memoirs. It shows me with a nurse toy. Because we had equal opportunity long before it was in vogue here in the United States. This was 1965, that photograph was taken. And we are kneeling in front of some really rugged-looking Cambodian mercenaries dressed in tiger suits. And said, we want to superimpose Marlon Brando's face over yours, because he's Colonel Kurtz commanding an army of Cambodians, and we want to use that as our promotion. Pentagon said, Bo, we don't recommend you do this because the army's not cooperating, because Francis Ford Coppola doesn't want to portray the United States Army in our very best tradition and uniforms. And so I didn't cooperate, but it was kind of a cute letter. The point is that the movie was correct. I did command an army of Cambodians. I was not their advisor. I picked that army of Cambodians because they were the most loyal to the Americans and the most ruthless that I've ever known in my life. And my travels. I speak Swahili. I've been to East Africa, West Africa. I was commander of special forces in Latin America, same time George Bush headed the CIA. I know Manuel Noriega personally and what's behind all of that. I've been into Burma and Southeast Asia. I speak Chinese. I ricocheted almost all over this globe in the remote areas. I can't tell you a lot about what the Fontainebleau Hotel looks like or Brussels, Belgium, but I can sure describe the jungles of Burma and Nicaragua and Vietnam and Africa to you. Point is that I commanded that army of Cambodians, and we went into denied areas. Denied areas were areas where there was no official war. And we were paid by CIA funds. And as a young major, I didn't care where the money came from, because my focus was on doing as much damage as I could to the enemy. And that's what I did best, and that's what I loved doing. And I didn't care. But the CIA also didn't care much, because they were using illegal narcotics in order to pay for such mercenary operations. And where did they get their license? Well, there was a guy named J. Edgar Hoover, who was the conscience of America. For the younger people, he was Mr. Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., FBI. He was the conscience of America. J. Edgar Hoover said, quote, "We don't care about people who use heroin. They are un-American, and mainly in the black ghettos." It gave the CIA license, friends, back in the early 60s, to begin to deal in illegal narcotics in order to provide a slush fund to pay for any covert operation that the U.S. Congress would not appropriate money for or approve of. And in fact, in 1962, the United Nations said, "No American forces in Laos." I would be happy just to hold the hands I love on this winter night with you. The smoke is rising in the shadows overhead.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hey, folks. CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
But there were 600 Americans that were lost in Laos. 308 of them were captured by the Pathet Lao, and not one has ever returned. And Henry Kissinger, a man who should be tried for treason, who received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1973, knows that he left those 308 to die alone in the hands of the enemy. And so for 15 years, this government fought a war that literally was non-winnable. In 1969, I worked as a special operations commander for the highest military elements in Vietnam. I worked for General William C. Westmoreland, I worked for General Abrams, and I worked for General Wyant. Fred Wyant called me into his office. He's a good, tall Texas gentleman. He, I think, was doing the very best he could. And he said, "Bo, stop trying to win the war. I had just requested from General Wyant that he give me the prisoners that would volunteer out of Long Bien Jail because I had a Cambodian army. I don't speak Cambodian. On our missions, I got more fire from behind me a lot of times than I did in front of me because these little turkeys were squatting down when they should have been advancing." And my explanation was, if I had Americans, at least we speak the same language and I can train them in just a few months to be guerrilla fighters. And he said, "Bo, we can't send Americans where you go." And I said, "What do you think I am? Look at these eyes." And he said, "You are special forces. And you can take those Cambodians anywhere, but I can't send Americans." And then he told me, he said, "Stop trying to win the war." He says, "You're not going to win it, and I'm not going to win it." He said, "Come up on the general staff. Use this war to get ahead of your contemporaries." He said, "Otherwise, it's going to kill you." I think Wyatt honestly knew that we never intended. There was no plan in the Pentagon to ever win. Clark Clifford said, Secretary of Defense, "There is no plan to win the Vietnam War." Johnson said, remember, "They don't even bomb an outhouse without my personal permission." What does the president know about outhouse bombing anyway? Generals in the Air Force specialize in it. Is it any wonder that we didn't have a chance? You're going to hear Simonette, a fighter pilot from Vietnam, after me, and he's going to tell you about some of the restrictions that were just absolutely ludicrous. Point is, Why were we in there for so long? The greatest nation on the face of the earth. We broke the back of the Japanese war machine. We crossed the Rhine. Who the hell ever heard of Vietnam? And all of a sudden, the greatest nation on the face of the earth is completely stalled. Well, for good reason. Do you know that Bell Textron helicopter lost 5,000 helicopters shot down in Vietnam? Just in Hueys alone. What would have happened if we didn't have Vietnam? They might have gone broke. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, just before he was assassinated, signed an executive directive that would pull out the 50,000 advisors in Vietnam in 1963. And as soon as he was assassinated successfully, then Mr. Johnson rescinded that executive directive and increased the forces to over 500,000. But boy, the guys that made the bullets and the bayonets and the beans and the boots and the bombs, they were making out. Every dollar spent, and if you'll buy any almanac at any 7-Eleven, you'll see the Vietnam War is the occasion that broke the financial back of America. Your back is already broke. Maybe you're not feeling it yet, but you will. You'll look and you'll see our financial record, and in Vietnam it starts to skyrocket. And then Jimmy Carter came along in 1976 with Paul Volcker and authorized fractionalized banking. And the next thing you know, America is a dead duck because debtors are not choosers. Unless, like a fellow in the past named Jesus Christ, turned over the tables and made them start the game all over again. And that's what I believe can happen, because the only nation in the world who has a government of, by, and for the people is right here in the USA. There's no place to run to. This is our country, but the politicians will only do what you require them. They see the light once they feel the heat. They only feel the heat if you build a fire beneath them. Now, I know it's tough, because in California, your senator is governor, and you got another Senator Cranston who's giving it up. So you don't have much representation. But you do have personal representatives, and you are a great state, one of the very greatest in the United States. You've got more voice, you're furthest, other than Hawaii and maybe Alaska, but your voice can be heard, and it's going to be very necessary. So I'm going to give you some ammunition in these vignettes, and then I want you to pick up whatever ammunition you feel you can best launch at the enemy. And I think there's one more hill to take, and I think that hill is Capitol Hill. Now, I have already taken an oath of allegiance, so I don't get to vote. How many of you took the same oath that I did? Defend the Constitution of the United States. Raise your hand. All right, you don't get a chance to vote either. You took that oath, and just because you set down a badge or took off a uniform, do you think that oath went away? That oath wasn't, as long as I wear this, I'm going to defend the Constitution. No, that oath was before God. It was a sacred oath. It was before this nation. So you're already committed. But the rest of you, I think, are committed too. How many of you are between the age, maybe I shouldn't ask this. I'll ask anyway, between 18 and 45. If you're between, I can't hold up my hand, but if you're between 18 and 45, you can hold up your hand. You, whether you know it or not, unless you are on active military service or a member of the unorganized U.S. militia, that is a law. You are to be prepared to defend the Constitution. That's not a very well-known law, because they're trying to get everybody's firearms locked up and away from them. You can talk to people of Lithuania and Latvia and the rest of these, and Croatian and Baltic nations, and ask them what they think about the U.S. Second Amendment, the ability to carry and bear arms. Now, from Vietnam, I left disgusted. I knew that we had dealt in illegal narcotics. Heroin was cheaper than beer in Southeast Asia before the heroin arrived in America. And when was America overdosed? Yeah, in the 60s. How many of you graduated high school in the 50s? Now, that one I can raise my hand to. Okay. How many of you that graduated from high school in the 50s had people in your class that you knew were addicted to illegal narcotics? I can't raise my hand to that one. Anybody raising their hand out there? All right, but you know what it is today. Nancy Reagan said before she left the White House that 90% of the high school seniors had at least experimented with illegal narcotics. This nation has been overdosed. Who did it? Well, again, it started in Vietnam. And what was the justification? We needed to, and this is true. As a substitute high school teacher, I often pose this problem. I'll pose it to you. We're now fighting the war in Southeast Asia again. It is 1965. And the enemy is cheating. And they are bringing all of their manpower materiel into Laos and down and in through Cambodia and infiltrating into South Vietnam. And the rules say we can't touch them. They're using a thing we call the Ho Chi Minh Trail. There is an Annamite mountain chain. It's like the Sierra Nevadas. It's the backbone that separates Vietnam from Laos and Cambodia. And these turkeys are on the other side of the mountains, and they're coming through the passes, and we can't touch them. Now, you be the president. I'll be the director of Central Intelligence. Mr. President, if we are not permitted to interdict the Ho Chi Minh Trail, this war can never be contained and will never be over. We need your permission in order to commit our secret forces across the borders of Laos and Cambodia. What do you say? A lot of you probably say, what does the Congress say? The Congress won't let us. The United Nations says no. Now what if I tell you, Mr. President, listen, we don't need the liberal Congress's money. We don't need it. We can do it the same way that the French did and the same way the British did before them. They were the ones that legalized the trafficking of opiates into China. That's one thing that precipitated the Boxer Rebellion. So now, if we don't need Congress that are liberal, can we do it so that we can win this war and stop the rising tide of red aggression? I got a lot of those kinds. Running dogs. You think the communists have got a lot? We got even more than they do. Almost every high school senior taking government or history will raise their hand and say, yes, it's okay. But we lost 58,000 young men and women to hostile fire. We lost 75,000 to drugs. And the nation became overdosed. And in 1973, when Mr. Nixon said we're out with honor, did the war stop? Maybe you're not familiar with an operation called Phoenix. It is an assassination program. It's designed to infiltrate into the enemy's infrastructure. Identify any, not just who are active enemy supporters, but any who would support the enemy, we think, and eliminate them in the vernacular with extreme prejudice. Now, who do you get to do this kind of thing? Is it a college graduate who's looking to make a little money on the side working for the CIA to put him through grad school? Is it someone you'd want to invite home to dinner, introduce to mom and dad? No. You get the slime. You get the criminals. Now, what do criminals do best? Are they integrity? Are they honesty? Are they pillars of duty, respectability, and honor? No. So if I am a Phoenix agent and I'm paid by the number of right ears that I turn in every weekend, and I go to you and I say, how many of you here are school teachers or ever have been? They're a good target. Okay. I go to you and say, I hate to tell you this. I know you're not guilty, but the crazy Americans have got you on a list of communist sympathizers, and it is a hit list. I don't want you to have any problem. But you know how they are. It isn't me, you understand. But if you'll pay me money, I think maybe I can buy you off the list. Otherwise, I cannot really be responsible for your safety. Are you going to give me money? If you do, then you'll have to continue to give it to me, and I'm happy because I don't need to turn in your ear. But if you don't, I have full authority to eliminate you with extreme prejudice, especially if you're somebody that I might not just like, because of your color or your creed or your job or your education or who your family is or what you might have done to my sister or something. This program claimed the lives, this is the lives of over 40,000 civilians. I know it doesn't equate to the 200,000 Iraqis that were just killed, but 40,000 individualized hits on civilians were paid for, and the real number is much higher than that. And does this program go on today? Yes, it does. How is the program paid for? Will you find it under the appropriations of the United States Congress? No, but it is ongoing even today. Why does it go on? Because, friends, there is big money in this business. You see, the righteous justification is we must continue to fight communism before it reaches out and strangles us here in America, in the People's Republic of California even. And that's justification. So if we must do this, doesn't it mean it's okay to deal in illegal narcotics because we don't care about people who use illegal narcotics? They're un-American. J. Edgar Hoover said it. But what's the real bottom line? How much money are we putting away in the old Swiss bank account? Because that is the real bottom line, always has been. I know a guy by the name of Dick Secord. I don't just know him, I know him well. General Secord was a hero in the Korean War. He was a fighter pilot. He helped run the covert aviation part of the Vietnam War. Dick Secord said with his very own lips, "I think I deserve the $8 million I made off the illegal Iranian arms deal for all my hard work. If you have to pay a patriot, I submit you have the wrong man. Patriots for profit should not be in America." And then Dick Secord, when he was before the Iran-Contra hearing, made the statement when he was asked, "Why were you charging the Contra an exorbitant profit in the arms that were delivered?" And he said, "Well, Senator, we're in business to make money." And the senator said, "Oh, I thought we were in business to help the Contra." And he said, "Well, couldn't we have two purposes?" Boy, patriots for profit. And so we have perpetrated this drug game. Now, in my own individual life, I left Vietnam totally disgusted in 1969. I came here to California. I used to go to Half Moon Bay because I was an aviator, a flight instructor out of Fort Ord. I'd go over to the Nut Tree. I'd run up to Tahoe. It was a pretty good life. I was still shooting out streetlights sometime because my RPM was redlined, and the Army was trying to detune me by sending me to 77 weeks of Chinese Mandarin. 70, can you believe that? 77 weeks. When you get into 47 weeks, almost a year of nothing but Chinese every day, and they say, "You're going really good, Bo, you only got another 30 weeks. But that's how they detune a demented Vietnam veteran, that they're afraid to turn on to the Pentagon or onto society. I went to the Pentagon as an Army General Staff Officer. Then I was assigned to Command Special Forces Latin America. This was 1975. My mission, as you can read in the book, right in the efficiency report, this man is responsible for unconventional warfare. Now, what does unconventional warfare mean? It means sabotage. It means guerrilla warfare. It means escape and evasion. It means direct action missions. These are the pinpointed type missions, the assassinations, the destruction of various facilities or people. And in my job as commander of Special Forces Latin America, it came to my attention that there was a man by the name of Michael Herrera who appeared on the scene in 1975. Michael Herrera is an interesting personality because he was a Mossad agent in charge of the Wrath of God element of the Mossad. The Wrath of God element is that element that takes revenge on any who cross Israel's interest. And you'll remember the Olympics, where we had a terrible incident and terrorists in Munich, right on television, murdered some of the Olympians from Israel. Well, Michael Herrera's job was to extend the wrath of God to them, and he murdered a Moroccan in Europe who was a lookalike for one of the terrorists. But, alas, it was the wrong person. This puts pressure on the Mossad. And so they sent Michael Herrera to Mexico City, where he was made their station's chief. Now let's go back and just right in that period of time, remember what happened. Everybody here knows where they were when JFK was killed, right? If you were that old. You do, don't you? Anybody here that doesn't remember who was alive on the earth? You know, the only person that couldn't remember where JFK, where he was when he was killed, was Richard Nixon. Richard Milhouse Nixon was called into the Warren Commission. They said, "Where were you, Dick?" And he said, "You know, I just can't remember." Richard Nixon was at a Pepsi-Cola directors meeting in Dallas, Texas, the day that the president was killed. Well, what else? Let's bring it forward now. What else was going on? In 1973, you might not remember this, but there was a thing called the Yom Kippur War. You do remember 1974. I know where you were in 74. You were waiting in gas lines. Am I not correct? You were waiting in gas lines in 74. This is important. A lot of people can't understand what's happening to this country. But if, as an intelligence officer, you use all information, you especially use historical fact. Then you project forward what is going to happen. And that's the value in being an intelligence officer or having an intelligence officer. And so in 74, you were waiting in gas lines for an oil crisis that was not. But all part of it was this. The Yom Kippur War is the trigger. It's the tripwire. In 1973, at the ending of the Yom Kippur War, they just had another war. The Six-Day War was when? 1968, wasn't it? So they just had two wars. They said, look, enough of this. Israel must be strong enough to deter our enemies. Well, what does this mean? It means intelligence. You've got to buy up the enemy assets so that you are able to know what they're doing so you can counter move or so that you can eliminate them before it is actually done. Like in the case of the president of Egypt. How do the Israel Mossad agents recruit agents? Well, I'll tell you, in America, so you can be on the watch out, in America, we are taught not to recruit based on money. Surprised? Because if I say to you, I want you to be an agent for me, and I'll pay you, well, all someone else has to do is pay you more. And all of a sudden, you're their agent, and maybe even a double agent against me. We are taught and trained to recruit agents based on family ties, if we can, or religious ties, or national ties. On those three bases, how many agents would Israel be able to recruit? None, because their enemies are Islamic and there's no family tie. There's no national tie because they want a PLO solution. And there is no religious tie because they're in direct opposition. And so what is the means that Israel recruits its agents? Money. They write the biggest check. Now the Jewish people, if you think you're under hard taxation, the Jewish people pay about 60% tax. Much of it goes to national defense. The Mossad has a fairly healthy budget. But it is nowhere near the budget required to buy up their enemies. So where do they make up the slush fund? Do they do it with garage sales, with car washes and cookie bakes? No. Drugs and guns. This is where the profit is. I'm trying to lead you through the wickets so that we arrive at the right place knowing what this new world order is and seeing whether we want to be a part of it or not and what you can do about it as an individual and a nation if you don't like it. So in 1975, we now have a brainchild. In the 74, why do you think we had the big gas problem? Do you think that there was no gas? Listen, the pumps over in Saudi, I've been an advisor to Saudi Arabia. The pumps over there are automatic. They fill up the gas tanks. When the gas tanks are filled, the pump stops. The problem was not in the gasoline. The petroleum was there. The real problem came down again. The Israeli Mossad needs money to protect Israel. And this was part of the brain trust. The whole deal was made that we suddenly said, okay, through the United Nations, you can't use single-hull tankers anymore. You have to have double-hull tankers. You have to have these super tankers. And the only people that control them were the people who just happened to own the oil companies and the banks. And so there was a stop. And we negotiated with the Arabs, because we're a member of OPEC, and we said, listen, if you will increase the oil price, because oil is 25 cents a barrel is 40 gallons. Oil is 25 cents a barrel at the wellhead in Saudi Arabia. Now, is oil a lot more maybe out here in the North Atlantic? Yes. It maybe is a couple of bucks to get a barrel of oil in the North Atlantic. But the oil at Saudi, which 30% of the oil comes from those Arab nations, is 25 cents a barrel. And yet what happened to oil? Oil went from like $1.40 to $32 by 1983. And the deal was this. If we will hold off the oil so we can lift the price, if you will invest the profits in selected banks. Now, Standard Oil is associated with what bank? Chase Manhattan. And so here's the deal. You're an Arab, and I am Standard Oil, Chase Manhattan. I tell you, listen, we're going to hold off delivery of any oil to drive the price up. What you do is you have to promise that you will take the profits and invest it in the American banking system. And if you'll do that, we will pay you 10% interest. Well, Arabs say, hey, why not? Well, this is the interesting thing, because we're going to, I hope, put together some pieces of the puzzle to show you historically and factually where we're at today and why. The Arabs now give, let's say, $1 million. I take some oil. Now the oil is up to $32 a barrel, and you've made $1 million. You don't get it, because there's just an entry that goes from Standard Oil, $1 million, into your account in Chase Manhattan. Jimmy Carter came along, and what did he do in 1976, besides give away the Panama Canal? He, in 1976, allowed Paul Volcker from the Federal Reserve System to fractionalize banking, to where for every $1 million, they could lend out 60 times that much. Now do you see what's going on here? And also, and who owns the Federal Reserve? Okay, well, the bankers own the Federal Reserve. And as a matter of fact, as long as we're there, let me...
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.